Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
Let us talk to Ismail Sabute. Ismail, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Joe. It's so good to talk to you again.
Yeah. But in difficult, your teenage daughter is in Tehran.
She is, yeah. My teenage daughter, my old family, like, you know, my parents and siblings and everyone. They're in Tehran, and it's not just me. A lot of people have been affected like me. A lot of people that have their lives and works here in Ireland and have been over to visit home, and now they can't get back because all the airports are shut down and flights are shut down. And since morning, I've been trying to reach my daughter. Okay. And I have not been able to. And in the morning, I heard the news that the street where she and her ma live was hit.
Oh, God.
And I have no idea where she is. What she's currently doing, because I can't reach her. And I can only hope, in earnest, that this whole madness is ended soon, and I can't imagine what people right there are going through right now. I know that people will be scared. This is honestly the worst kind of emotions that I've been through in I don't know how long. I don't know how to put it, though.
And Ismail, when was the last time you were talking to your daughter who's 15?
We were speaking last night, and she seemed happy. She seemed okay. I mean, it was all right. So what do teenagers know about, you know, war? And they hear, you know, the sound of blasts and the rockets outside, but, you know, it's all fun and games to them.
And can you, obviously you can't, you know, but the communication is so difficult, you cannot even telephone someone else that might go around and check the street.
I could reach my mother, and I asked her, and she tells me that she is not answering her phone. I've been trying to call her.
So I
will keep trying. It's probably just, you know, the communication, because, you know, you have to go through a lot of hoops and jumps and jump through a lot of hoops and VPNs and that kind of thing in order to be able to access WhatsApp, because right now they're cracking down on the internet communication, you know, because they're afraid of espionage and everything.
But it's not a fairly closed society anyway, Iran, in terms of...
The government, they're not the, let's say, the most relaxed government when it comes to internet and communication and flow of information. And in times such as this, well, they tend to kind of restrict the internet even more.
So that
people have to go through VPNs and, you know, switch through different VPNs to be able to access WhatsApp or Telegram or, I don't know, these things.
You would have heard what Donald Trump says this morning. He wants everyone to evacuate.
I heard that. I heard the news. He tweeted on his social media that he was advising all citizens of Tehran to leave Tehran. But it's obviously an impossible thing to even say, because, like, you know, there's 15 million people living in Tehran. It's logistically and in every other way impossible to even imagine it. So how 15 million people? I don't want to say what this even sounds like, because you can't say that, and because it's not even possible. People can't be mobilized. That the roads won't allow that. It's simply impossible. And I don't know what he means by tweeting something like that. I don't know what's going to happen. And maybe he's trying to throw uncertainty around. I don't know what kind of games he's playing, but that's just not possible. People of Tehran can't leave their homes.
And while I know he signed up to it, America did the G7 summit statement, called for a de-escalation, obviously, and a ceasefire. But Trump is now saying he wants a real end to the nuclear standoff with Iran. In other words, he wants Iran to capitulate.
That's right, yeah. And from what I know, I'm not a politician, and I wouldn't be pretending that I am one. But yeah, I am fairly interested in the Iranian politics. But from what I know from Iranian politics, the Iranian government are not going to capitulate to that. And I mean, they're going to just, you know, I mean, to the detriment probably of the country and lives of people, innocent people, on both sides. The war is going to drag on because, I mean, the Iranian government, they're not going to give in.
And what the whole pretext for this is the Iranian government and their race, so to speak, to develop nuclear weapons. Is that something people in Iran talk about?
That is something that people in Iran talk about, not that they give much credit to it. I mean, this is mostly, if I'm allowed to say, Western media propaganda. Mm-hmm. I mean, not maybe so much the media, because there's media on all sides, but like, you know, the Western politicians' propaganda that Iran is seeking nuclear weapons. And I don't know if in a clandestine fashion the Iranian government are actually pursuing nuclear weapons. I wouldn't know that, yeah? Mm-hmm. But I don't think that Donald Trump knows that either. And I don't think that really exists. Because I don't think that Iranians really are pursuing it. And they don't really need it. And the IAEA, they've been inspecting their Iranian nuclear sites, and they've been, you know, they've been going through everything, and they have not, and they've been complying. Iranians have been complying, and they've been going through six rounds of talks, you know, since a couple of weeks ago. They've been going through talks, and all of a sudden, in the middle of these talks going on, I mean, this Sunday, there was another round of talks was supposed to happen over in Oman, but you know what happened?
They were cancelled.
Yeah. But in the middle of these talks going on, the invasion happened, and that is just not acceptable. That is just trying to provoke Iran into pulling out of the negotiations, pulling out of the talks, if you will. And I don't know, maybe the better diplomatic decision for the Iranians was not to pull out of the talks, and maybe try to make it go somewhere. But they did what they did, and you know, now the country is in the state, and people, they don't know what to do. People inside and outside of Iran, they are desperate now. And I'm sure, like, the people of Israel are also being affected by this, and no one wants that.
And Ishmael, when you were talking to your parents, what age are they, and how are they enduring this?
My father, he's about 71 now. My mother's about 61.
Okay.
And well, yeah, they try to, you know, they try to keep their faces so that I don't fret too much, as you know. But I know that, you know, everyone's scared. I hear people, I hear other people talking how they're talking, and I know that people are scared down there. They fear that what happened in Gaza might also happen in Iran because of, you know yourself, I don't want to go into the details of what's been happening. And, you know, everyone knows. And people are afraid. What if? Because already civilians have been targeted, not as collateral damage, right? Civilians have been targeted in Iran. And people are wondering what's going to happen next.
One of the discussion points is that the regime in Iran might topple.
The regime in Iran might topple. Look, Joe, I'm not a fortune teller. I don't know if the regime might or might not fall. Sure, personally, I am not in favour of the regime. But seeing as there is no viable alternative at the moment, right, who would you put in their place? Like, you know, there is no one. I mean, there is no political party. there is no organization that we would trust even as much as this current corrupt regime that's in place right now. Like, you know, if you topple the current regime, the situation is going to only get worse because the country might break up. That, I mean, these are all speculations.
Yeah, but they're very... they've got catastrophic... Everything that's happening at the minute has a catastrophic impact in the Middle East.
And the whole region will become even more unstable than in the past four or five decades.
Okay, say with us, Ismail. Sami Hazari is in Dunboyne in Ireland, but she left Iran 30 years ago and indeed has written a book called Trapped in Iran. What's your... first of all, have you friends there still, Sami?
Hi, Joe. Yeah, hi. I have family and friends in Iran. Yeah, all my families are in Iran. And it's just not a very safe situation in Iran right now. And it's shocking what is happening. Mm-hmm. But I have absolutely opposite view than Ismail has. Iranian people are waiting for something to help them to get rid of this regime. And they are being tortured behind closed door for so many years. And they are waiting for something, some magic happen, because this regime brutalized people for the last 47 years. I grew up in the war. The aggression is unbelievable, was and it still is. After I published my book, I have a brother that is a petroleum engineer, and he wasn't. And he was, you know, that most of organization in Iran is under control and under the control of RGC, so Revolutionary Guard.
Yeah, yeah.
And he, because they were in control, he wasn't even able to talk to me. You know, if he, I was going to talk to my brother, it would be through my mother. To my mom's mobile, because they are checking, controlling every conversation that they have. So I don't understand, you know, how they're controlling the, you know, the normal people. I don't think that Israel killed as many people as this regime killed for last 47 years. 8 million of Iranian people are outside of Iran because of the brutality in the regime. We have old, smart, intelligent people that they cannot go back because of this regime. So I have to say that we were waiting for something happen. You know, I wasn't expecting, I mean, I'm not happy with the destruction that is happening in Iran, because Iran is a beautiful country, was. I mean, Tehran is not, Tehran has almost 10 to 15 million, and it's not easy to evacuate. You know, it's not easy to renovate and build that the country. You know, the country is just under attack. But I tell you that this regime has no mercy in Iranian people. So they killed so many people, still so many political people, you know, asking for freedom, asking, you know, to be treated fairly. They are in prison. And I don't think that anyone except those people that are being paid by a regime is going to be supporting this regime. This regime also have so many people that they are hiring and sending outside of Iran to spy for them, to spread the good news, while they're closing Iranian door to Iranian people. Iranian people are jobless. They're living in poverty. Especially in Kurdistan region, in Balochistan region, you know, in different parts of Iran, this government is being brutalized people. My own brother, being brutalized, he been in prison. Because after 2009 or 10 revolution, green movement in Iran, and after that, wherever he applied for a job, he never could get a job, you know. And he's 37 years old, he doesn't have any job still, you know. So this government is brutal, and we have, I think that Netanyahu knew that there was no, aggression before this revolution was in Iran. You know, revolution. So,
but are you saying, Sami, if, and this, I know it's a tit for tat, is not a strong enough phrase to describe the the horror out there at the minute. But are you saying that if the regime topples in Iran, the Israeli attack would have, the end would have justified the means?
Absolutely. I think that Netanyahu, Israel is not after Iran's land. Israel is not. I know Jewish people. I have loads of Jewish friends. And I know that they love Iranian people. They don't want the land. They just want to help Iranian people to get rid of this regime that no one else has helped them, you know. So we didn't have gun. We didn't have anything in Iran to fight against this regime. Whoever is saying anything against this regime, if they are going to arrest him, put him in the prison, torture. We have so many intelligent people in Iranian prison right now. And we have a person that is trying to lead Iran, and it's Crown Prince Reza Pahlavi, that he is fighting for last 47 years he's abroad and he's fighting, okay? Different people are having this different view, but I think that we don't have anyone more suitable than him to come and lead people. Lots of people love him and they want to see him. I mean, he said that he is going to be independent. He doesn't want to... he just leave it to people to decide that, you know, but he's just going to be there to support people and supervise people to organize a new government.
And the comments of Donald Trump today, President of America, saying evacuate Iran now. And he's not calling for a cessation or even a de-escalation. He wants it sorted. He wants the whole new Iranian nuclear threat ended. So evacuate Iran, is, I presume, as Ismail said, absolutely meaningless, is it?
It is. Tehran is a huge city, It's just not possible. And people are just going to north side right now. And like there are kilometers of cars are at a Tehran exit trying to get out of Iran and different parts. But, you know, it's just not possible. And what Donald Trump is doing in America right now is a threat to democracy in America. This revolutionary guard, this regime is done exactly the same that Donald Trump is doing. Behind door, they are arresting people, they are kicking people, they are hitting people. I'm just wondering why media wasn't there for Iranian people when these women freedom started, women movement started in 2022. You know, there are 1,500 young people being executed by this revolutionary guard. And how many Israeli drone killed Iranian? Sorry, how many Iranian being killed by Israeli drone? I don't think that is even 500 people. This regime killed and brutalized people. You know, why am I here? Why Ismail is here? Why all these 8 million people here? Why all these foreigners being displaced from all their cities?
I'll let Ismail come back in. But Ismail, I've been looking it up there momentarily, but the UN nuclear watchdog who you quoted says Iran is in breach of its obligations.
Well, they said that Iran is in breach of the obligations obligations. But yeah, there have been compliances and non-compliances there. I mean, I'm not an expert on the matter, but I know that.
What do you think of what Sammy says? The means would just the horrific means.
That point of view, I might say, is not. I mean, this is from what I think. Not very popular among Iranians that I know, because firstly, the Reza Pahlavi, the deposed Shah's son, might have some marginal popularity among the kind of extremist Iranians, but it's by no means a majority, not even a big minority. And not a lot of people support, I don't think anyone in their right minds would be supporting a foreign country attacking their land, their homeland, and no less a country led by someone like Netanyahu, who has been convicted by the International Criminal Court, as we know, and that has run a campaign of genocide against the Palestinians, as we know, and. So why would you want, in your right mind, someone like that to invade your country in order to give you peace and freedom. Are you deluded?
According to the International Atomic Energy Agency, Iran has accumulated 400 kilos, 880 pounds, of uranium enriched to 60%. That level of enrichment far exceeds what is needed for civilian energy production and is close to weapons-grade material.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it is, yeah, it is kind of what I know, the kind of information that I have, yeah, that they are enriching uranium to 60%, yeah, which is kind of closer to the 90%, which is used for production of fissile material for nuclear weapons. But there are no nuclear weapons there. And I don't know if there will ever be. I don't know if this is about nuclear weapons in Iran or about eradicating the national identity of Iran or taking over the sovereignty of the Iranian people. I don't know what this is about. But if it was about the nuclear weapons, the nuclear program that Iran is following, then why wouldn't they let the talks go on? Why would they invade Iran in the middle of those talks? Why would they?
And then to come back to the other side, so to speak, Sammy, like Israel has nuclear weapons.
I mean, I'm not in favor of any country to have a nuclear weapons, Joe. I mean, why US has a nuclear weapon? Mm. Why are they policing the world?
No, just that Israel are saying we're attacking Iran because they're on the road to nuclear weapons, having nuclear weapons, but Israel already has them. But anyway, that's, I know it's complicated to say.
Iran, the previous Shah started this nuclear for the peaceful purpose. So he started it. But this regime came and killed all of those people that they were in charge. So before 1979, Iran and all the region were peaceful. So Carter's regime administration came and toppled the regime, the Iranian king, because they didn't want that, you know, and they just got rid of the regime, brought illiterate person to make the Iran to go backward, probably 50 years backward. Iran was going to be modernized, and that wasn't something that probably America wanted, you know. So right now, I'm sure a lot of Iranian people that they are regime supporter and saying they are getting a scholarship with this regime to come and study here. They are coming here. The rent is being paid. So that's why they are just supporting of this regime. If people just go through so many problems like me and not be able to go back, not go to go and see my family. My father and my mother died and I couldn't see them. You know, the pain that I feel in my heart, and I'm sure that millions of Iranian people are like me. So I am not supportive of regime and I just wanted them to go. I didn't want this aggression. I thought that is going to happen to the, you know, peaceful conversation, you know. But these people, the regime doesn't understand. They don't understand any logic.
I just want to finish with Ismail. I presume, Ismail, you didn't get any information about your daughter within the last 25 minutes. No, you still don't know.
No, I'm afraid no. I'm still hitting that wall.
Hopefully you'll get good news soon. From all your friends and indeed Sammy's friends and family in Iran. Joe at rt.ie 51551 is the text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
A big change today, as you know, you've heard it, and thankfully more people will hear it as they go through today, in the terms of organ donation. As you know, at the moment, you either on your driving license or a card that you carry with you, where you say, I wish in the awful event of something happening to me and losing my life, I wish if possible for my organs to be donated. That's the narrative, as Orla Tinsley said on Morning Ireland, the great campaigner. The narrative is changing somewhat in that the conversation will now be held, because the situation is you now have to opt out, and you go on today. It's very straightforward, actually. I was on it this morning just looking to see how it worked. You go onto the HSE website and you walk down basically through with your name, your phone number. They then send you a verification number to prove that it's you, PPS number, and then you say, I don't want to be considered for organ donation. You opt out. Now, even if, so opt out, that's the end of the conversation. But even if you don't opt out, the new legislation still insists that a conversation has to be held with, they call it the designated relative, the closest relative of the person, of the deceased. But at least the conversation will now happen. Previously, medics were may have been reluctant or whatever, but the conversation will still happen. But Keelan Murphy, Keelan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
It's a good. You think it's a very positive step forward.
I do, yeah, because it's very personal to me. Yeah. I'm currently on the transplant list waiting for a kidney. So this is a big day in my life.
Yeah. And how long have you been on that transplant list?
It's coming up to a year now. In July of last year, I had an operation to actually remove both my kidneys. I have a genetic disease.
Okay.
So, yeah, I needed to get two kidneys removed. They'd grown too large. And I've been on the transplant list pretty much ever since then. So, yeah, just waiting on a call pretty much every day since then.
And you're on dialysis, so?
I'm on dialysis 3 days a week, yeah. Yeah.
So what, for 3 or 4 hours each session?
I'm 3.5 hours, Monday, Wednesday and Friday.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what would you say to people who might be a little bit worried that this might be a step too far?
Yeah, no, I understand. It's a deeply personal choice whether to donate or not. I just ask people to imagine if it was like your child or your parent or someone you love waiting on that call every single day. I'd ask them to think about those of us who are barely living. Like donating your organs is just, it's an act of pure kindness and it can transform so many lives. I was just listening to your previous two callers there and, you know, we're kind of bombarded at the moment with the worst of humanity on TV and on phones and everything, but organ donation is just, it's the best of humanity. It's just exactly, completely selfless. Just turns someone else's pain into someone else's hope and, you know, it gives all of us that are waiting a chance to live our lives to the full again.
And Keelan, do you know where you are on the list? Is that
no?
There's
no number now. It's all to do with, you know, suitability and matching people. So I mean, you know, you could be very lucky and be waiting a short time, but you might be waiting an awful long time as well. So there's no place as such. But so you really don't know when that call is going to come.
If it's genetic, have other members of the family, Keelan?
Yeah, it's very prevalent. My disease is called polycystic kidney disease. So my mom had a transplant 23 years ago. Actually, her sister donated a kidney to her.
Okay.
And she's still with us. Amazing. My brother had a transplant as well nearly 4 years ago. And unfortunately, my son, he has the same condition as me. Now, he's only 14, so it doesn't affect him in any way yet, but he's well aware, looking at me, that it's kind of coming at him in the future as well. So it's big in my family of aunts and uncles and cousins and everything who've gone through this as well. So we've really seen the benefit of organ donation in our family. It's been like amazing. We've had, you know, my mom's whole life has changed. She got to be a grandmother to all her grandkids, go to all our weddings, all because of her sister donating an organ to her. So, you know, we've seen the benefit of it.
But Keelan, having both kidneys surgically removed.
Yeah, it was fairly brutal.
And there was obviously, that's how difficult the situation was for you.
Yeah, it was pretty grim. They were almost a stone in weight by the time I got them out. So it was kind of like being pregnant kind of constantly for a long time. So it was like I was out of breath. I couldn't eat properly. I was really struggling coming up to the operation. So in a way, it was a great thing getting them out. I could breathe again. I could, you know, eat again. But unfortunately, then I'm being, you know, dialysis is
I don't know.
Insofar as, and this is not a finite question, the recovery from having both kidneys removed.
It was horrific. Yeah, and starting dialysis. I started dialysis the day before the operation. That in itself is a, you know, tough change, but on top of having an operation, like such a serious operation as well, like, and having to go straight into dialysis, you know, I was in ICU for a few days afterwards, and yeah, it was brutal. Tough going.
Chloe Greer, stay with us, Keelan. This is Keelan Murphy. Chloe, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. Again, you're very happy with the change in the law, which a lot of people are. Your mother donated, as you obviously passed, donated her organs in 2012. What was the process?
Yeah, so for me, I was quite young when it happened, but when we found out, my mother was in a coma and she was certified to be brain dead.
Okay.
So in terms of organ donation, she was quite a good candidate. I think the statistics are only about 1% of people are a good candidate for organ donation. Our dad approached us and, you know, he said mum had an organ donor card and the hospital had approached him asking, would we be comfortable as a family and consent to her having her organs donated? And there was no hesitation at all in our family. We were really happy to go ahead with donating her organs. And absolutely no regrets with doing it. Obviously, it was our mother's wish to do that. So, you know, it's all about respecting her wishes as well at the end of the day, even though she's not there with us. And it was a huge comfort for our family after she passed away. I mean, I think a month or two after she passed away and, you know, the grief was still very fresh, we were getting cards through the door from people saying, like, you know, my son has received your mum's kidney. Thank you so much for this, you know. These people are getting extra birthdays, Christmases, weddings with these people. And it was so amazing to see, you know, all these strangers sending us cards who didn't know our mum at all. And now she's literally saved their lives. I think the most touching story that came out of it was her heart was sent across to the UK to an 8-year-old girl at the time who was in an induced coma. And, you know, her parents are there thinking, when are we going to get the call? Is that call ever going to come through?
Yeah.
And they did get the call, thankfully. And, you know, for their side, they know that out there someone has lost someone, which, you know, was our case. But at the end of it all, we can know that her wishes were respected. And, you know, she's gone on to save lives. And in a way, she's still around with us. Her lungs, her liver, her kidneys, and her heart is still out there beating.
Wow. What an incredible gesture. As you say,
and it's just fabulous to have the kind of opt out now, and I really hope it'll bring about more, you know, help with the waiting list for, you know, for people like Keelan who are having to do dialysis. Some people are doing the dialysis, you know, 3 times a week, and you know, it can really just put a whole stop on your normal day to day life, things that we all take for granted. And these people are waiting for this phone call that could come at 3 a.m.
And you think the opt out option, so to speak, has to be publicised more?
I think so, yeah, because you know, I think a lot of, from what I've read of people who are maybe sceptical about this new act, people are kind of scared that once they pass away, that their body is going to become some kind of property of the state or something like that, and maybe that there will be that ambiguity between their family of, oh, well, they didn't sign up to the opt-out, but did they even know it was there? And, you know, we're kind of scared to be the ones to say yes. So I think, you know, if people do want to opt out, that's fully their choice. I'd obviously encourage people to look into organ donation and the huge benefits it can provide. But I think to maybe prevent the skepticness that can come from it and maybe the animosity that people might have towards the act, to make sure that, you know, the opt-out option is not this kind of hidden away thing
and also,
makes it look a bit more sinister.
Also, as I say, it changes the narrative, as Arlo said, because if you don't opt out, the medics are entitled to ask the family, obviously in a very sensitive way. Tell them they're not on the opt-out register. Do you know what their position would be? And the family have the final say still. But at least a conversation has to be held, and there's a beginning of a narrative there. Sally Nagel, Sally, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What do you think? You're happy with this new legislation? You're happy with the opt out?
I am. Well, I hope it's, you know, as has been said, I suppose I've been someone that has received a kidney transplant, and I have friends that are awaiting on transplants, and I can see the big difference this makes to lives, and have obviously experienced it personally myself, the transformation. So I do hope, you know, I think a lot of education has to come with it, like has been said, to explain what exactly this is, you know. But like anything new, that takes time, takes, you know, within the public to really, but I mean, the wishes of the family are ultimately still going to be followed through. And that's why the biggest thing is that conversation, and not always the easiest conversation to have. But I think maybe making that more in our daily life, that it can be as simple as just explaining to our loved ones, look, these are my wishes when the time comes when I pass on.
Yeah, even today, hopefully, it will generate conversations.
Exactly.
Being on programs like this, and I know when Frank Deasy came on the program, the late Frank Deasy, who was a friend of mine back in 2009, and he pleaded for this. Unfortunately, Frank was on the program on Monday, and he died by the end of the week as he was under an operation. But Frank's eloquence, and I can still remember his phrase about we live in a world of strangers, but we're not strangers to each other. His brother Declan Deasy. Declan, good afternoon again. How are you, Declan?
Hello, Joe. Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear. So this is a good step forward.
Oh, a marvellous step forward. Considering all the terrible news we're faced with these times, this is at least a one good news item for everybody, because it gives the opportunity, like what Frank was saying, raise the awareness of the great potential that you have in organ donation. And it takes a long time for that to seep into people's minds. So today should be a day which becomes the catalyst for more discussion and more narrative and more communication and more awareness raising, not just on the part of the medical community, but within families, because that's where it really comes down to, that people understand what their loved ones want and how to respect those wishes. And that's key to this. But I think it's a great day. And the Act is really a legacy to Frank and to yourself for having maintained the awareness campaign about organ donation over the years.
And unfortunately, Frank, as we know, died and left two young children and his wife.
That's right. Two boys and his daughter. It was a tragic time for us all, and it's something we never forget. And I was talking to Marie earlier today, and she was saying that she was delighted that this Act was coming into effect, and she was keen that Frank's legacy was remembered, because that was what kick-started it. The wave of requests for donation cards at that time was really quite exceptional. But unfortunately for Frank and for us as a family, it wasn't to be. But that's the message, that, you know, discuss in the family and have your mind set clearly when there isn't an issue. Because when it becomes an issue, the emotions begin to take over, overload people at a critical and sensitive time. So it's better to have the discussions when things are calm and when people can decide in an orderly fashion what their wishes are and how they want them respected. But, you know, when you listen to the stories of people on the waiting lists, and when listen to the good stories about people who have had transplants. It can be nothing, only an encouragement for everybody to try and help others, as Frank said.
Yeah, well, it's such a legacy. And the article is just incredible. The full text of the Observer article.
Yeah.
The system works, but it needs people to act, to register as donors. And now you have a situation then to consent to organ donation. There is a huge opportunity here for people to change the world, really change the world.
That's right.
I am only one of thousands of patients on organ transplant lists in Britain and Ireland living on our own invisible death row. And so, as you say, I'm glad to hear that you spoke to Marie, and she's more than happy with the changes that have happened. Declan, kind regards as well, and God rest Frank, and Chloe as well, and Sally. And I'm also conscious that our other callers have lost relatives as well. Joe with RTE.ie.
Thank you, Joe, for what you have done for the donor, okay, the organ. Yeah.
Thanks, it's Declan.
Something that you should be pleased with.
I surely am. Thank you, Declan.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We've been asked to do so many different things over the years and find various, from engagement rings to relatives to brothers to sisters. Usually we're successful. Rosario Walsh, we haven't a hope of finding what you're looking for. I'm sorry. Looking at it. It's what year are we talking about?
Joe, we're talking about 1988 or 1989.
Okay. And where were you living then?
Zimbabwe.
Okay. And what stage of your life were you at, Rosario?
I was in a pregnant state.
Okay. Was that on your first?
Yes.
Okay. So you're pregnant. You're living in Zimbabwe in 1988-89, and you got a woeful craving.
I did indeed, for soup, mushroom soup, but it had to be Aaron. And they hadn't Aaron soup in Zimbabwe.
Okay, so if you have a craving when you're pregnant, it has to be, especially a woeful craving, it has to be answered.
Yes, and I got on to my mother anyway back in Kilkenny, Piltown, County Kilkenny.
Yeah.
And I told her the situation, and she started sending me over soup. So she was sending about two packets every few weeks.
Okay.
And now, Joe, the cost was terrible. So after a while, I told Ma, problem solved. I'm okay. No need to send any more. But the thing was, the problem wasn't solved.
Okay.
So I thought of Aaron Foods in Thurles. They had a factory there at the time.
Yes. You're a big company.
So I wrote there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wrote there, told my predicament, and left it at that.
Okay.
And some months later, anyway, this big box arrived.
Right.
And like there was nothing identifying on it, you know, so nothing to indicate to
Aaron
Foods or that. So yeah. I assumed we have to go down to the post office to collect it. And I assumed, God, somebody's after sending me disposable nappies. The child was, Dara was born at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
And there were 32 stamps on it, each costing a pound.
From
and I thought, no.
Irish stamps.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
And so, anyway, I went home and 12 nappies, only 4 dozen packets of soup.
Mushroom soup.
Aaron mushroom soup, Joe.
Okay. Now, When you say the woeful craving, how many times would you have to have mushroom soup every day? Aaron mushroom soup every day?
Oh, once I got it, yes. And as I say, for months we had mushroom soup with mushroom sauce, with mushroom gravy, you name it. And after a while anyway, Kevin, the husband, I'd say he got a bit tired of it. And he suggested we give some to friends, you see, and mm-hmm. we had a good friend, Mike Brown, living out in the bush.
Right.
So next time he was in anyway, I begrudgingly gave him a packet or two.
Okay.
But I'm sure he didn't appreciate it nearly as much as I did.
So,
is
it fair to say the baby in the womb was fed on mushroom soup?
He was born at this stage, Joe.
Oh, was he? Okay.
But I was feeding him, and I tell you, he was thriving.
Are you looking for? A packet of air and mushroom soup? It's discontinued. Is that what you're looking for?
No.
Oh, good.
Somebody took it upon himself to send this box of soup.
Oh, there was no letter in the box saying this. You knew it came from Aaron, but there was no letter saying, "Hiya, my name is..." Well, it was Tony O'Reilly. No. Dr. AJF O'Reilly, who was in Heinz then, but Heinz owned Aaron as well, and he was in Irish Sugar before that, so he had a big connection. But you're saying there was no note in saying, "Hi, my name is Mary. I'm the product analyst, and I saw your letter." And so there's no. So are you sure it came from the Thorless factory in Aaron, which, to be helpful to us again, is now gone?
Yes.
Are you sure it came from the factory?
No, and talking to your researcher there earlier, I never thought of it coming from anywhere else.
Yeah, because you had written to the plant. Now, the reason my theory in this, and I was doing the dates earlier this morning, between 86 and 89, Dr. AJF O'Reilly, Tony O'Reilly, was chairman of both, and he lasted much longer, and Heinz owned Aaron. I think Aaron's owned now by a different company. He had an incredible connection with Zimbabwe because Robert Mugabe, who was president of Zimbabwe, was he there during your time?
Yes.
Mugabe. Okay.
Yes.
This is my theory that he knew Robert Mugabe. In fact, he became a close personal friend. And the connection was that Robert Mugabe, president of Zimbabwe, had been educated by the Jesuits, as had Tony O'Reilly in Belvedere in Dublin. And when Tony O'Reilly, as chairman of Heinz, was going to Zimbabwe to try, he bought a number of companies, food ingredient companies, he met Mugabe and they hit it off immediately because of the Jesuit connection. And they were lifelong friends. And Robert Mugabe, both are deceased, unfortunately, but Robert Mugabe spent time apparently in Castle Martyr, spent a lot of time there with Tony O'Reilly after his wife died. I just wonder, did Tony O'Reilly see the letter and say, "Look after that woman, she's in Zimbabwe, I love Zimbabwe, I love Mugabe"? And but you said there was no note. That's probably typical of something you would have done. But you said there was no note. So you're trying to find out.
I'm trying to find out who sent it. And God, had I known that your man was in charge, I'd have asked him for money. I could have come home for the pregnancy.
He was in charge. Tony was in charge. Now, yeah. The baby, so this 19, so what age is the mushroom baby now, so to speak?
He was born in September 88, so he's 36 at the moment, and he's listening on a laptop over in England.
And does Dara, that's his name, does Dara like mushrooms?
Dara loves mushrooms. No meal is complete without mushrooms. And when he comes home, the first thing I'd have ready for him is a packet of mushrooms.
Mushrooms,
and,
okay.
He'd be buying more then. He buys them in bulk, I think. He just loves them. Like, he was fed on them, really.
But now, Aaron, because we've been on to them, they're still as friendly as ever, the staff. They don't make mushroom soup for the retail market anymore. They make a chicken and mushroom soup.
Yes.
So there are mushroom soups available, but apparently mushroom soup is not as popular as it was in Ireland. It was almost a luxury in Ireland in rural Ireland, especially, I'm told, between the 50s. John B. Keane, all that carry on. You had a bowl of mushroom soup maybe before your Christmas dinner. It was regarded so highly. Now, apart from eating mushrooms and mushroom soup and loving mushrooms, how is Dara getting on in real life?
Oh, sure. Look at the mushrooms stood to him. He has great brains and that. And he's a doctor in A&E over in England. He's living in Sheffield. And he was on The Chase back last year.
Oh, yeah.
And
he won it.
He did.
He did. He got back, and the team won. They beat, it was an anniversary special, so there were two chasers on during the program.
Okay.
So he faced the beast twice and got through. So he's delighted.
And do you put his brains down to the mushrooms? Apart from the obviously the genes of his mother and father and his own own ability.
Yeah, myself, the husband, the mushrooms, and I tell you, there's slurry being spread all around us here, regular. And we have three children, and the three of them have brains. So I thank the farmers for the slurry. Sheehy's and Kennedy's.
Okay. Does Dara tell the story to his friends?
I'd say he doesn't see it as important as I do.
So you wanted to go back to your I'm the one that's rambling here. To come back to you're trying to find out, does anyone who was working in the Aran food factory, food processing plant, it was already sugar and it was a beet plant and all the carry on, around 86, 87, 88, 89, would they know who would have sent that box of mushrooms? Because you want to thank them personally.
Yes.
Even though it's a long time ago. And you want to tell them that the child, the babby that was born, is a genius.
Yeah.
Is a genius.
Is a genius.
Is a genius.
Yeah,
and why not?
Mushroom head, but yeah.
And not mushroom brain either. He's a big brain.
No.
He's a big brain, but it was down to that. Do you still like mushroom soup?
I do, but I don't like stuff. I don't like the lumpy mushrooms. And
you like
it? I love the mushroom soup, yes, but especially if it's blended. And chicken and mushroom, deer and stuff in the, you know, the liquid thing, lovely.
But then the other thing I heard recently, okay, you were saying you had this woeful craving for mushroom soup when you were pregnant, but I heard of someone who developed tinnitus, and previous to developing tinnitus, they would eat the house out of mushrooms and mushroom soup. And once they developed tinnitus, they couldn't look at a mushroom. I don't know, does it work the other way? Now, when you were pregnant, did you say you had two other geniuses in the house? Apart from yourself.
Kieran was the next born. We were back in Ireland for that.
And what did you? What was his pregnancy fed on?
I'm not too sure, but I know for one of them, anyway, ice cream, 99s, I was mad for. So I'd know, was it him or Emma? Emma is the baby. She's the princess.
Yeah. And you know what you fed her on when she was in the womb?
Well,
she
didn't get a fancy diet, I'll tell you that.
Okay. And she's doing well too. Oh, okay, Rosario, I think it is a needle in a haystack. I think it's very difficult, but it's also an indicator. Apparently now, again, one of the most popular soups now in Ireland is chicken noodle soup. God, we've gone very posh, haven't we?
Oh, gosh,
it's far from chicken noodle soup. We were reared.
I know.
I'd love some mushroom. I'd love to mushroom myself. Okay, Rosario.
Yes.
We've no chance. First of all, it's nearly, I started here in 1988. So it's 37, 38 years ago.
Yeah. And I went looking for him.
There's a good chance the person might still be with us, please God.
Oh, yeah. Because I went looking a few years after coming back. It dawned on me. Like, I was so excited with the soup. I forgot where it came from. And then we were back a few years and I went looking. I went to Turles and realised the factory gone. There was nothing. I thought there might be an old office or something there, but nothing. And I had no name, nothing to go on. And I forgot about it again for years.
Well, you're great, and you want to thank. And that's another great thing about this wonderful country. People do thank each other and make about it away. Yeah. Stay with us, Rosario. Cathy O'Connor.
I'm sure it was AJ, maybe he left me money.
Yeah. He died about a year ago. And the last time we were talking about AJ F. O'Reilly was when we were talking about Kerrygold. And the importance of it and the difference it made.
That's some story.
And I got a note from he was unwell at the time, and I got a note from a friend of his to say, Dr. O'Reilly was listening to the various callers praising him on Liveline. He was unwell at the time. He was in bed. And people knew this. It's not breaking any confidence that he had been unwell. And that on that day, he shed a tear because of the lovely things that people were saying about him. But anyway, Cathy O'Connor. Yeah, Cathy, good afternoon. God rest him. Cathy O'Connor. Cathy, hey. Good afternoon.
How you doing, Joe?
What's your craving?
Oh, well, I mean, it was when I was a teenager, me and my sister, mushroom soup, Heinz mushroom soup, the tin Thai mushroom soup, and smashed potatoes. Do you remember the smash you put the water in and the granules? And that was, we loved it. That was what we ate for our dinner every day.
And remember, smash came in a packet, a flat packet. It was flakes. Stop. It was white flakes.
Yeah, or was it little granules? And then you put boiling water in
and you got them fork and spun it round.
The robots. Yeah, that's what the robot showed us, that we were completely mad, peeling the potatoes and boiling them and mashing them. They thought we were bonkers.
The robots, the ad was, what a memorable ad, if we can remember it. The ad was, the robots arrive and they're just laughing all the time. And what they're laughing at is people peeling potatoes, washing potatoes, whereas they had smash.
Yeah. Right, smash. Yeah, we were the earthlings. They were bonkers.
It's smashed still on the shelves, I wonder.
Oh, do you know, I doubt it. But just kind of, I just jogged a wee memory there. I was walking my dog and I just said, gee, because remember the mushroom soup and smash?
And yeah, and be fairly gloopy, would it?
Well, it depends how much water you put in it now. I mean, we probably had it down to perfection. You had it, we were only kind of like teens and things like that. We can make it pretty handy.
Okay, safe walking,
just
Cathy. Safe walking,
thank you,
Cathy.
Joe.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck. Yeah. Bye.
And we thank you, Cathy. And the search goes on, Rosario.
Good.
Okay.
We have a wide listenership, Joe. We might hit gold.
The chase is on for the man or the woman who sent the box to Zimbabwe. They'd remember that. The box of 4 dozen packets of Aran mushroom soup to a family in Zimbabwe, an Irish family in Zimbabwe in around 1988-89. Okay, thank you indeed, Rosario.